Well, good morning and welcome. My name is Reverend Jennifer DeBusk Alviar, and I feel honored to be a member of East Shore since 2018. And I have missed many of you. I love being part of this beloved community, and lately I've been engaged in frequent travels to other UU congregations, preaching about equity, accessibility, and inclusion for brain injury survivors and those who identify as neurodivergent. This is my unique advocacy call to ministry. And one of the great joys of as being a guest preacher at different UU congregations is that I learn new gathering practices of what it means to be together in the sacred space. So today I wanted to teach you a beautiful call and response practice that I learned from another UU congregation. So I will open with a welcoming stanza, and when I extend my hands to you as the congregation, you're invited to respond with these words: "You are welcome here." So let's practice. Welcome to this space. In all the beauty of languages, cultures, and skin tones that come together in your uniqueness, you are welcome here. Beautiful. In all the ways you experience and express gender and abilities, you are welcome here. In the beauty that is who you love and how you love, you are welcome here. With all the religious and ethical traditions that inform your spiritual life, you are welcome here. You are invited to join us with an open mind, a loving heart, and welcoming hands. You are welcome here. Beautiful. Good collaboration together. May you feel warmly welcomed and included in this sacred gathering space. Come, let us worship together. I invite you to join me in imagining a garden. In this garden, we cultivate a diverse ecosystem with rich, nourishing soil. A hardy environment where plants and species of all kinds can grow and thrive to co-create vibrant life together. A fertile green space alive with cross-pollination and a gift of a healthy garden, this in its most natural state. The same is true with people, especially folks who may grow more like wildflowers, ones who cross-pollinate ideas and ways of thinking and behaving that may diverge from the garden, regular garden variety. Yet if we cultivate the soil for a healthy, diverse ecosystem, then healthy, diverse people grow and thrive too. Isn't this what we want for our community? A place where all people are welcomed and affirmed in their natural state of wild beauty, wonder, vitality, and human flourishing. Well, I am one of those wildflowers. My brain and body diverges from the usual garden variety. I am considered neurodivergent. Neurodiversity reflects diversity of the human brain, body, and behavior. So how does this play out for someone like me with hidden disabilities? Here's how I engage the natural world as a vital ally in my advocacy work around equity, accessibility, and inclusion. Growing up, I was always a wholesome, nature-loving kid. This photo was taken in 1977 on a family backpacking trip in Northern California. I was 6 years old. This image evokes the spirit of wonder and delight when a tiny red ladybug landed in the palm of my outstretched hand. Just a few days later, my perspective on the world drastically changed. Here I am, as a critically sick patient, lying in the intensive care unit at Stanford University's Children's Hospital. My neurosurgeon, Dr. Jerry Silverberg, diagnosed my condition, and it turns out that I was born with a clot of abnormal blood vessels known as an arteriovenous malformation, AVM for short. On that day, the blood vessels burst, leading to a life-threatening brain hemorrhage. The cognitive impact of my medical condition occurred in the left hemisphere of my brain near the speech and language center. The bursting of blood vessels left me temporarily voiceless and silent. In the months following my surgery, I regained my speech, yet I noticed a marked difference in how I accessed my words. I didn't think my way into speech by gathering ideas in my head, very UU style, but instead I felt my way into speech through embodied movement. My brain injury directly impacted executive functioning around word-finding difficulties and memory recall. I could not process, integrate, and retain verbal information in fast-paced multitasking environments. Therefore, I devised creative workarounds through challenging obstacles. In the face of language difficulties, I turned to nature as my guide. This is a beautiful, mighty oak. I grew up near greenbelt districts and open space preserves on the indigenous land of the Ohlone people in Palo Alto, California. I thrived in this eco habitat. Nature offered a tranquil, calm space for me to listen and observe. I used my senses to track my thoughts without distraction. This kinesthetic process ignited in me a newfound sense of agency and vitality. As a neurodivergent person, I felt empowered to live from strength-based assets versus a deficit-based mindset. After graduating from college, I backpacked for a month in the wilderness of Alaska with National Outdoor Leadership School. This awakening to nature, soul, and embodied movement led me towards seminary at Star King School for the Ministry in Berkeley, California. I earned my Master's of Divinity degree, specializing in ecology and theology, as an interfaith minister ordained in the Unitarian Universalist tradition. For many years, I crafted a series of nature-based sermons that incorporated a multi-sensory embodied approach towards preaching. Each worship service included photos of my sports-related travels, bicycling 5,200 miles across the United States coast to coast, from Bellingham, Washington to Portland, Maine, canoeing down the Missouri River in Montana with my family. And this is also part of the cross-country bike trip. Joining the local, this is Montana along here. We're juggling words with imagery. Joining the local community crew team for rowing excursions along Lake Washington in Seattle. Hiking in the mountains of Mexico at a music festival. And walking along the lush green highlands of Iona, Scotland for a Celtic pilgrimage. I loved my life as a contemplative eco-traveling athlete preacher. And yet, as seasons change, life changes too. 2020 marked a season of tremendous change for all of us during the global health pandemic. This timing happened to coincide with my own threshold crossing into midlife. I turned 50 years old in the summer of 2020. This pause caused me to slow down and pay attention to my body in new ways. I experienced deep fatigue that I hadn't noticed before. I was exhausted. Not just physically from my own sports-related travels, but emotionally too. And I felt something else stirring within me, something akin to grief. Francis Weller evokes the feeling in his book, The Wild Edge of Sorrow. Grief and love are sisters woven together from the beginning. Their kinship reminds us that there is no love that does not contain loss, and no loss that does not remind us of the love that we carry for what we once held close. Grief and love, love and grief, together, inextricably intertwined. You can't have one without the other. This is a wise and poignant reminder, but it is not an easy truth to embody. The truth of my life was this. I longed to experience a sense of belonging. The ache of loneliness I felt centered around my own particular timing in history. For example, my brain injury occurred in 1977, 13 years prior to the Americans with Disability Act of 1990. At that time, there was no language that existed for neurodiversity or disability justice. Instead, all that existed was a medical model of curing and fixing what was broken. But what if I didn't feel broken? Instead, what if I explored ways to break down societal barriers in order to break through, break open, and break free into a more expansive, liberated way of being in the world? And so began my lifelong journey of working towards equity and justice, leading to greater healing and wholeness. Yet I hadn't factored in the grief embedded in what it means to live in a world neither designed. Neither designed nor intended for neurodiverse people like me. You know, grief comes in different times and different rhythms. This has been 46 years, and sometimes it feels fresh, and sometimes we're just weaving it together. Do you know what it feels like to be invisible? Let me bring it home to you, unvarnished, in the words of Adrienne Rich. When someone with the authority of a teacher describes the world and you are not in it, there is a moment of psychic disequilibrium, as though you had looked into a mirror and saw nothing. Invisibility takes many different forms. I am a white, cisgender, able-bodied woman who lives with hidden disabilities. I recognize how the intersectionality of race, gender, and other marginalized identities further impact neurodiverse people around barriers to accessibility and inclusion. This is why disability advocates have shifted language from the focus from disability rights to disability justice, in order to center the voices and lived experiences of people who are underserved and underrepresented in communities within this movement. So my question around invisibility and marginalization is this. How do we hold grief and love in such a way that moves us towards liberation with our souls intact? Let me repeat that. How do we hold grief and love in such a way that moves us towards liberation with our souls intact? Grief without love embitters us. Love without justice cannot lead us towards transformation and healing. This question is the very soul work that each of us is being called to live into and answer through our own unique perspectives. As someone who experiences the world kinesthetically, I find myself drawn to reflect on this question by engaging my body in nature. For one full year, I cultivated a daily spiritual practice of art, an art-based practice of incorporating photography and poetry with nature. This intuitive process engaged my senses and called forth presence without analysis. I simply showed up each day, curious and open to what my nature walks might reveal to me. On a bright October day, I happened to be walking through one of Colorado's beautiful aspen groves. I marveled at the sunlight filtering through golden aspen leaves, contrasted against the brilliant blue sky and elegant white bark. Along my path, I noticed a deep wound pierced in the trunk of one of the aspen trees. My hand reached out instinctively to touch its wound. I felt my way along the edges of the exposed bark. My eyes softened in recognition and tenderness to the mystery of how wounds come to be. Perhaps lightning? Fire? Who knows? I wasn't there. Yet the tree's presence moved me without any need for words. This aspen tree, scarred and wounded as it was, embodied wholeness, integrity, and dignity. In witnessing the tree's wound, I felt seen and witnessed in my own invisible wounds. No explanations necessary. Just a simple act of solidarity. In this quiet moment of reciprocity with nature and soul, I found the words I needed to write my poem for that day. Wound. Whispers in the woods of grief and pain. Untold stories of longing. Necessity to be witnessed in the quiet company of nature's healing presence, deep and ancient soul practices of grounding and renewal. Wound. What is it about reciprocity that guides us towards our individual and collective healing? From an ecological perspective, human beings thrive in reciprocal relationships with nature. Robin Wall Kimmerer is a biologist, author, and member of the Citizen Potawatomi Nation. She expresses reciprocity beautifully in her book, Braiding Sweetgrass. Paying attention is a form of reciprocity with the living world, receiving the gifts with open eyes and an open heart. She offers a living, dynamic, relational sense of kinship that cultivates a deep sense of belonging through nature's diverse ecosystem. From a healthcare perspective, U.S. Surgeon General Dr. Vivek Murthy highlights belonging as central to his work in healing the loneliness and isolation that he identifies as a public health crisis. We are biologically designed to be in community with others. As he eloquently puts it, healing is about making whole. To be a healer, you have to be able to listen, to learn, to love. Healing leads to relationships, community, and belonging. It strikes me that nature offers a valuable model of universal design, benefiting neurodivergent and neurotypical people alike. My greatest experiences of healing and wholeness have come from nature-based settings that foster community building and break down barriers. Conversely, some of my greatest barriers to accessibility and inclusion have come from institutions that do not factor in the needs of neurodiverse brains and bodies. For example, higher education prizes excellence and leadership around the written and spoken word. Not only that, but this didactic lecture-style approach assumes that all people process information verbally. Furthermore, it assumes that students learn best through a posture of stillness as a model of attentive listening. As a neurodivergent person who, with lived experience in academic institutions from grade school to graduate school, those are a lot of unchecked assumptions. My brain and body require kinesthetic movement as a core access need of mine. This tactile approach to learning is how I compose my thoughts and translate them into language for writing and preaching. In addition, grounding my body in nature offers a calm, sensory-friendly environment to support my epilepsy in regulating my body and reducing stress. This, too, is another access need. Between Robin Wall Kimmerer's nature-based wisdom of reciprocity and Dr. Vivek Murthy's gentle wisdom of belonging, I began asking myself a two-part question. One, how might we center the voices and lived experiences of neurodiverse people to design more inclusive learning spaces in academic and religious institutions? And two, what might it look like if we shifted these institutional models towards a nature-based, embodied, multisensory approach towards learning to meet a wider range of access needs for neurodiverse people? These questions prompted me to research public gardens as a nature-based model of equity, accessibility, and inclusion. This journey, in turn, led me to cultivate a relationship with the Kubota Garden. The Kubota Garden is a stunning 20-acre landscape that blends Japanese garden concepts with native Northwest plants. It is located in the Rainier Beach neighborhood in Seattle's South End, one of the most diverse zip codes in the state of Washington. Fujitaro Kubota lived for 94 years, from 1879 to 1973. He was a landscape designer who carried seeds of change both literally and figuratively. He was, not only did he bring seeds from his native Japan to plant in his Japanese-inspired Kubota garden, in Seattle, but he carried these same seeds to the internment camp in Minidoka, Idaho, during World War II. Fujitara's nature-based Shinto religion sustained his spirit in the face of racial injustice. By grounding himself in the natural world, he found the inner resources to design beautiful rock gardens within the walls of his imprisonment. The war may have contained his body, but not his spirit. Fujitara designed his garden in 1927. It became a public garden in 1987. Today, this tranquil green space is free and accessible and family-friendly to the public, maintained by the Seattle Parks and Recreation, and volunteers from the Kubota Garden Foundation also contribute towards supporting the garden through plant sales, community events, and garden maintenance. Inspired by the history and beauty of this garden, I reached out to Sophia Eichels, the Kubota Garden Volunteer Engagement Coordinator. I asked her this question: how might we collaborate together in designing inclusive spaces where neurodiverse brains and bodies can learn and thrive best within this nature-based environment? Over a period of several months, she and I explored creative partnerships. Sophia shared with me a wide range of community events designed by the Kubota Garden Foundation. And this is to meet diverse interests, ages, and needs. Some of these garden activities include monthly public garden tours, a nature-based guided meditation called forest bathing, a Japanese buto dance performance, taiko drumming, jazz in the garden, an iris exhibition, a pollinator safari, a soapstone carving workshop for youth, and an art-inspired sculpture walk. Currently, my advocacy work around connecting neurodiverse people in nature-based learning environments is still in its early development stage. My vision is to serve as a bridge builder and garden liaison. I hope to invite healthcare organizations, faith-based communities, and academic institutions to experience the Kubota Garden as a model of greater accessibility, equity, and inclusion. This, in addition to fostering a tranquil green space model of universal design, where people of all abilities will benefit by grounding our bodies in nature. Whether you are a wildflower like me, who diverges from the usual garden variety, or someone who really loves to be part of a vibrant, thriving eco-community, may you feel warmly welcomed. May you find solidarity with those who have been scarred by struggle and yet united by nature's gift of healing, presence, and reciprocity. May you find solace and kinship in honoring the wisdom that grief and love are sisters, woven together from the beginning. Collectively, let us build a bridge to belonging where all people are affirmed in their natural state of wild beauty, wonder, vitality, and human flourishing. May it be so. Amen. Shalom. Salam. Namaste. And Asheh.